streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is June 20th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We are happy to say this is our third year anniversary on the air. And tonight we have some special guests, some past guests, and I welcome anyone that wants to call in and chat with us for a little bit. So it's going to be a great night. Hang in there with us. If you'd like to call, the number is 347-826-7273. Or you can just listen online at blogtalkradio.com/thestreetsdontloveyouback. So we'd just like to welcome everybody tonight. We're going to have a great show. And before we get our first guest online, we are going to let you talk with Boyd.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and I just want to say thank you, everybody, for being here with us for the last 3 years here at the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show, and we just want to give everybody around the world thanks. It's been a blessing.
All right. We're going to start out tonight. We have a special guest online, and we asked her to come on tonight and help us co-host the show. This is Miss Mary Betafuco, and we're going to give her an opportunity to tell us a little bit about her story and just chat with us. And welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to congratulate both of you for your 3 years on the air and all the good that you're doing for the young people. And I wanted to say that I have a program called Victims Speak Out, and I started out with as a abused wife and in a religion that was very controlling. And many of the members were either kicked out for taking a stand. A lot of children were molested in the organization, and the organization covered it up. I don't know if you noticed recently on Facebook about the settlement, $28 million, that this young girl sued the Watchtower because they covered it up for many, many years. So for a very long time, a lot of members of that organization were either being molested or they tolerated certain types of spousal abuse. So myself, I was in, I had both situations. And of course, growing up in the streets, I grew up in violent neighborhoods, and I was really not, I was kind of full of hate at one point in my life until I realized that you can't keep hating, and you got to take that hate and turn it around into a positive way and try and help other people, because we all didn't come with a set of instructions. So basically, that's what I do. And I invite guests to tell their story on some women that were victim of incest, spousal abuse, even physical child abuse, and basically that's it. I'm a little hoarse tonight, so don't mind me, Lucinda.
And you have a powerful, powerful story, Mary. You know, we've talked to you several times. We've been a guest on your show a couple times, and you know, we just appreciate you coming on tonight to spend this time with us, because you know, we want you to continue sharing your story, because there's so many women out there and men, but that have been through abuse, whether it's domestic violence, you know, sexual abuse, rape, different things, you know. But there's a lot of women out there that can get help from your story, and we appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yes. Would you like me in a little while to kind of read you my story? It's brief, but
we will. We'll have you share your story again throughout the show tonight.
Okay, great.
We have a couple of callers already on the line, so
good.
We're going to go ahead and we're hoping that our switchboard gets lit up tonight. We are expecting a few past guests also to come on and recap and share their stories with us. So we're going to go ahead. We have a number here. The last three digits are 075. Caller, you're on the air.
This is Emily Pendelakis. I'm just calling in to listen to your show.
Oh, great, Emily. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Emily works with some boxing professionals and amateurs in Phoenix, Arizona, and a good friend of ours. So we welcome you to the show, and thank you for calling in. And hang in there with us. If you want to talk to us later on, let us know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just listening in. I appreciate you guys, you know, the coverage you give in boxing, and, you know, I want to support you for your birthday show. So congratulations.
Thank you, Emily, so much. We're going to put you back on hold, and thank you for listening. We're going to go to another caller. The last three digits are 618. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Lucinda and Robert? This is Big John out of Los Angeles. Congratulations on your 3 years.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. We met Big John, I think it's been about 3 years.
Absolutely.
Big John, why don't you go ahead and just recap a little bit about your story and then how we met and what you do now.
We met, you guys are doing a piece on, I think you guys are doing maybe gangs in L.A. and what we're doing and intervention. And that's how I met you, my buddy Skip. And we were telling you how we were getting young men and women into careers through Second Call, Buzz being former gang members and, you know, prison time and ex-dope dealers and all that good stuff. And now we're building a community instead of tearing it down. And that's how we met.
All right. And can you tell the audience a little bit about how you grew up and how you were able to change your life?
Yeah, I grew up in the mean streets of Los Angeles. I grew up in the blood gang. But growing up, it was a fight every day. And at the time, I didn't know that I suffered from low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to commit suicide. I just didn't want to do it myself. So what I would do, I would dress with all the bright colors on, all that red, and hope someone else killed me. I just didn't want to do it myself. And growing up like that, it just created a savage-like mentality, whereas I didn't care about myself, so of course I imposed pain on others so you feel what I feel, because
mm-hmm.
I felt no love, breeze, rage.
Exactly.
So during all that time in prison kind of changed what I think. And I met some individuals who taught me what a man was, so I had to change that.
Wow. And how much time did you do in jail or prison?
I did about 7 years.
Okay.
Close to it, yeah.
Right.
It felt like eternity. I mean, you don't get me wrong. There's dudes we meet. I got a gentleman that just came to our class. He did 26 years. He getting his life on track. You know, he got his beautiful wife, and they're getting things together, and the brother about to go out there into the workforce.
Right, and he's lucky to come home because, you know, a lot of people that do that much time, you know, are lucky to come home because, you know, once you go in those gates, it's not guaranteed that you're going to come out because a lot of stuff happens behind those bars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a rough ticket for the young people out there who haven't been to prison. If they haven't been, do not go. That's no place for any individual to go to. It's like an inhumane society up in there. There are no rules. You either a predator or you prey. And those that don't understand that, you either the victim or the suspect. And it's brutal up in there.
That's right.
That's the animal kingdom up in there. So only the strong survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than the streets. I mean, because everybody that's been in the streets, they're back there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you got to fight up in there. you can't shoot nobody and run and hide. No, you got to fight up in there. You can't fight. You're probably going to be doing something else. So.
That's right. And tell us a little bit now about what you're doing now and what Second Call is.
Right now, we are in the communities doing reentry, to whereas we're not dealing with the at-risk youth, we're dealing with the proven risk. We know you did it. So what we're doing now is getting individuals who get out of prison and want to change their lives. We're getting them on the right track, giving them life skills, because oftentimes we found in the community was that a lot of the brothers don't understand getting up early in the morning, going to work every day and working hard. So we're teaching those life skills and teaching young men how to provide and protect their community instead of destroying it and become law-abiding citizens and do something meaningful, to whereas they can live a fruitful life, but it starts with the mind. And so we firmly believe that that's what we're doing in the community, teaching the life skills and teaching young men and women to pick up tape measures instead of guns.
Very good. That's great.
And, John, we have Mary Benefuco on the line with us. She's a domestic violence abuse survivor, and we asked her to come on and co-host the show with us tonight. So, Mary, do you have any questions for Big John?
I just want to say, John, that's great what you're doing, because that's really what they do need to they, you know, all of us weren't shown love in one way or another, either whether it was at home in our family and then go out and on the street, growing up in the streets. And then you, the only people you attach to is the people in the streets, because it seems like those are the only people that understand you. And you don't care about school and you don't care about other things because you don't have any encouragement at home. I was a victim of abuse even in the house, and then growing up in the streets of downtown Brooklyn and Hollis, New York, I was in fights all the time. So I could care less about school because every day, like you said, was a fight. But now the fights change. We're all fighting the other way, because we want to fight to help other people. But it's a rough world out there, and they don't know, and they don't realize until, unfortunately, we get older, and you realize, gee, I never got an education. And even if I wanted to strive for an education, I couldn't get an education in those schools because it was like 95% violence. You sat in the classroom, they were cursing at the teacher, they were throwing. Teachers went out windows, my school. So, I mean, you had no choice but to fight every day. I mean, every day was, you're walking down the street, somebody's saying, well, you're looking at them. You're not even looking at them. But, of course, you got to stick up for yourself. And then you get, you marry or whatever, and you take all the garbage with you to your next relationship, and things don't work out. So the thing is that turning it around and trying to help other people, that's when we start healing, and that's a good thing.
That's beautiful. Yeah, one of the things we found out in the community was that gang members turn into domestic violence suspects. They end up, the violence that they perpetrate against one another ends up being perpetrated against the woman who they love or care for or have babies by. And just the other day we were talking about depression, and in the neighborhood, we couldn't imagine going to one of our friends and say, hey, man, do you ever get depressed? You'd be called every name in the book. So unfortunately, in the neighborhood, no matter how you feel, you have to mask it and just put on that wall. I'm the toughest. No matter who get their brains blew out, it's okay. I'm not going to blink. I'm not going
to
flinch, and it's all good.
You have to stay.
Unfortunately, that breeds a lot of dysfunction.
Oh, definitely. And how about, I mean, I don't know what your home life was, but my home life wasn't too good either. So, I mean, it's a sin to say, but I didn't know anything but violence, even as a child. And then I took it into, I grew up in the street, then I married, and I was comfortable. That's what I was used to. So, if he was calling me names and that, I was used to that. So the streets call me names all the time, my household. So you don't know any better. It's because that's what you're accustomed to. Like somebody else, if they weren't used to that and heard somebody calling them names, or they would be like shocked. But no, I just kind of went with it,
Well, it's amazing you say that, Ms. Butterfuku. I don't want to say your name wrong. But anyway, it's amazing that you say that, because in my community, we were taught that the more you bring pain and hurt to a woman, the more she'll love you. And as I was growing up, you couldn't convince me that that wasn't the right thing, because the more I did it, the more they did love you. But at the end of the day, I was only doing that because I had low self-esteem, and then I had to go pick the woman who had low self-esteem also.
Right,
and more than likely, it was always the women who were the prettiest. Those are the ones who had the lowest self-esteem.
Yeah,
and and then I would abuse them mentally and physically. But
me too.
I mean, they would love you until you're dead. And that was crazy. And so now, I mean, I wouldn't even think about doing nothing like that now because I had just one of our friends that came to our program and he quit coming through the life skills. He was doing good, working as a union electrician, and decided that his woman didn't make his food fast enough and he beat her down.
Oh, I heard that. I hear you.
Yeah, just the other day he got sentenced to 34 years of life.
Oh, my goodness.
29 years old. Life is done.
Wow.
Because he could not control his anger.
I hear you. I'm Italian, and I used to make pots of sauce. And if he didn't, if he didn't like what I put in it, he would throw the whole pot all over and all over me. You know, it's like that 4 hours cooking that sauce. You know, it's the whole thing. It's sad because
I used to go through all that. Because I done some goofy stuff right to this day. I couldn't imagine it. And then we'll go around, come around, because I have girls, and things have happened to where. You know, one of my daughters got into a situation with a young man. He put his hands on her. Where me, my first reaction was to kill him. I was going to kill him and his mother, but then I had to think about it. You know, the things that I've done. So we'll go around, come around.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, when it hits home, it hurts, you know?
Yeah.
It really hurts.
But it's all good. I mean, I'm just glad I'm able to contribute back to the community and help young men and women not to go down my path.
Exactly.
And don't do what I did.
Exactly. And don't make the mistakes you made. Because, you know, if you can save somebody some mistakes, that's more for them to go forward, you know?
Absolutely. And I love it. So I'm glad that you are a survivor and multiple women need to hear that story and know that there is a chance that you can live a different kind of life without going through that abuse. That's beautiful. So appreciate the work you're doing.
Same here.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Big John, and Ms. Butterfugo, and Ms. Emily for tuning in tonight, and people that's in the chat room as well. And
Absolutely.
I said, these 3 years have been great. You know, it's just been phenomenal. We done had several guests on the show across the country, and we just glad that we have a platform for people to speak out, you know, as far as a lot of ingest that goes on as well. So we thank everybody for that tonight.
Well, you know, we most definitely support you out here on the West Coast, brother. And anything you need from me, Skip, or Second Call, just let us know, brother.
You already know, man. And I really appreciate you calling in tonight, Big John, and give the family my love, you know?
No doubt. Hey, man, congratulations on your third anniversary.
Thank you, John. Hey, and before you go, John, can you just do one favor? And let the audience know about the awesome 401k plan that gangsters have.
They don't have one. There's no blood. there's no blood in Crip retirement plan. you can't go to Kaiser and whip out a blood card and say, you know, I got this $2 prescription drugs. None of that. You don't get a check in the mail for services rendered for all the work you put in for the hood. There's no such thing. you don't get that car. You don't get that paycheck every month. No.
That's right. Well, we appreciate you calling, John. We always love to hear your story. You know, and we look forward to seeing you again when we're back.
No doubt. Appreciate you. All right, you guys have a great night.
Good night, John.
All right.
Well, we have tonight on the air, East Coast to West Coast, and we are just having a great time tonight on our third anniversary show. We're looking to hear from a lot more people tonight. We do have another caller on the line. Last three digits are 006. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Lucinda. This is Sherry.
Hello. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Bob and Lucinda, congratulations. This is Sherry Denny calling in from, you said you got East Coast, West Coast. Well, now you got Denver, Colorado.
Woohoo!
We appreciate that, Ms. Sherry, you know?
Yeah, you know what? You guys are doing such an amazing job. I've been listening in to the last few shows, and I got to tell you, it just puts me to tears. I've been abused myself pretty much all my life, and I am just so glad to be away from that and on the right path. And I'm so glad I ran into you, Lucinda, about a year ago, And what's interesting is we're interested in the same thing, and it's to help families and children recover from such, you know, either being on the streets or spousal abuse or, you know, parental abuse, whatever it is. And Lucinda and I have partnered up, and, you know, we do a couple things. One of them is about cyberbullying. Mm. And you and I, we're really just launching this right now, and I can't wait till this really gets some traction there, and we'll be talking a lot more about that. In fact, if I remember right, I think we're doing a show about that next week. No? Yes?
We are.
Yeah.
Next week is the topic of cyberbullying.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I called in just to congratulate you two wonderful people on what you do and how much you're putting back into the community. And it's amazing. And you know what? We need more people like you on this earth. And also, Big John, I know you are full of really good stories there. I can't wait to hear some more of those. Does he have a book out or something?
No, not yet, Miss Sherry. They run the Second Call movement out there in South Central and in Los Angeles out there. Mm-hmm. And they also do a ceasefire meeting every Wednesday night out there as well. And we met them, about a year or two ago, you know, and just been, 3 years ago. Wow, yeah, it's been phenomenal, you know, time passes, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was October of 2009. So, yeah, time so flies. And we've been fortunate to network with a lot of great people across the country and outside the country. So, you know, God is good, and we just like to mingle with good people and people that's giving back to the community, because it ain't about self, you know. It's about mm-hmm. giving back, you know. And at the end of the right. day, self is satisfied.
Yeah, I see some books in this. I really do. And Miss is it Buttafuoco?
It's Buttafuoco in English, yeah.
Buttafuoco in English. your voice, definitely back east. And,
yeah.
You've got some wonderful stories there that are turning
Thank
out
you.
Because of what has happened here. So, anyway, again, I just wanted to say hi, Lucinda, and chime in for tonight, because 3 years, you know, on a radio show, that's the beginning of something really good. You take care.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Sherry. We'll talk to you later.
I'm going to tune back in on the Internet.
Okay, awesome. You can chat with us on there.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and anyone can log in, listen online. Like I said, we do have our chat room open, so you can chat with us there. And once again, you know, we're just having a great night tonight, celebrating 3 years on the air. We've had some awesome, awesome guests and friends come on and share their stories. And we're going to go back to Mary for a few minutes here and let Mary continue telling us a little bit more about her story.
Okay. I wrote actually it's brief, but I wrote a story and I submitted it to all the ex-Jehovah's Witnesses to their website, and I'll read it to you, because it's easier for me to do that, because, you know, I don't want to be redundant or whatever. It says, my name is Mary Aguilar. I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses in the early 70s and 80s and a victim of domestic violence. My husband was a witness too, and still is. I spoke to the elders. Now, elders are people like priests. Several times about the violent behavior, their excuse wasn't, I wasn't doing enough. I wasn't a good wife. I didn't pray enough. I wondered how they knew how much I prayed. After several attempts to talk to the elders, nothing was done, and I had nowhere to turn. The abuse and the beatings from him was so bad that once my face was unrecognizable, and he turned my children against me. I remember the time he took me to San Diego, about 60 miles away, and threw me out of the car and left me there for an hour with no money, nothing. I was petrified. So much for Christian brotherly love. He was always saying I had a problem with headship, and the brothers would go along with what he was telling them, placing all the blame on me. I tried repeatedly to please this Jehovah, but the more I did, the worse my husband became. He turned my children against me, telling them that I was a bad mother because I was disfellowshipped and I didn't love Jehovah. I was in a helpless position before leaving for field service. Field service is something that when they go door to door to your house, they call that field service. He would beat me. I could never please him or the organization. I almost lost my little baby boy who ran in the street. When I screamed, he said, "Daddy told me I don't have to listen to you." It was as if I was being tortured by my own family. I felt as the whole entire world didn't understand. I couldn't go to my family in New York as they weren't Jehovah's Witnesses, so I didn't want to disgrace the Jehovah's organization. My ex-husband told me he wanted me to get a job, so I found a job in a French restaurant as a hostess. While working, I spilled the drink on myself. When I returned home, he accused me of letting someone kiss me. He beat me so bad with belts that I thought to myself, this is one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Something's wrong here. I couldn't understand how a loving organization could put up with an evil person. I was disfellowshipped for smoking, but wife beating and turning children against their parents was tolerated. I could never do enough, and I felt like I was a whipping post for everyone. The brothers were so self-absorbed that they failed to notice that I was being abused, nor did they care. We moved to another part of town, and this was good for them, good for him, because he knew no one there, and the beatings were more and more frequent. I was so exhausted from fighting, trying to please this Jehovah who was never pleased, and I thought to myself, what if I died one day in the course of these beatings? Are they going to say to me, she told me so? I would never want the responsibility of someone's life. All I cared about was that watchtower and how to please the leaders and getting people into that organization. I realize now that it's a publishing company with a lot of rules which actually stole my life. One of my neighbors heard my screams when my husband was beating me and told me later that I was a battered woman and I needed to call a phone number she gave me. I hesitated to call the number, but I finally did, and to my surprise, the counselor said to me, when you come here, you'll think you're married to all these husbands. I thought to myself, no, my husband's a Jehovah's Witness. But when I went to the shelter, I saw there was no difference. I was reinstated at that time. Reinstated means that they put me back in the religion. I was reinstated at that time, and when I decided I needed to go for help, so I told the brothers that I wanted to go to the shelter for battered women, and they said that they could help me. They couldn't help. And they said they could help me by advising me on what to do. I need help emotionally and financially, I was told. You can't go to the world for help. They told me that I couldn't go to them because they're worldly for help. So I asked them, are you going to help me financially? And, of course, go ahead. They told me that I could go. When I came out of the shelter during the time I was trying to put my life together, my husband kidnapped my children and hid them in different witnesses' homes. Even a local elder hid my children. I didn't drive, so I took buses going from town to town to find them. I finally told the police, and they found them and returned them. One of the so-called sisters, the one my husband eventually married, hid my children in Jehovah's Paradise. When I got my children back, I moved to a new place. I had someone stay with them at night. I was scared living by myself. The next morning, the brothers called and told me that they wanted to talk to me, so I said, okay. They came over and told me they saw a car in front of the house, and I said, yes, I was scared for my protection. A man stayed with me. I told them that we didn't sleep together. They told me that they were going to disfellowship me, and I said, just because there was a car there? And they said, yes, and I asked them, if I was in a room full of cigarettes and cigarette smell was all over my clothes and I told you I wasn't smoking, would you believe that? I was. Things aren't as they seem. So I was disfellowshipped again, and soon my husband divorced me. Interestingly, the woman my husband married was, who was terrible to my children, but yet considered by one of Jehovah's Witnesses a loving sister, I couldn't understand how these two people could get away with these things they were doing. He winded up marrying that woman. They were seeing each other before the divorce, and then he set me up so he could be free to marry her. When I wrote to Brooklyn, Watchtower headquarters, a letter and notify them that what had taken place, and they had a simple talk and saying to the local congregation not to get involved in people's business. I would never be able to sleep at night if I knew I had done such terrible things to a woman and then taken her children from her. My baby was only 2 years old. My heart was broken. That terrified me. I had to go through life being disfellowshipped and wearing a label that I didn't create and being cast aside like a piece of dirt. But I'm back now, and I want others to know you're not alone. and we don't have to suffer in silence anymore. I don't care now, and I want others I don't want to be what others want me to be, because I am me, and neither accept me for what I am or don't. But I will not change. I love life, and as long as I'm alive, I will speak out for others in distress. And I want to thank everyone who gave me a voice, and also God for allowing me not to lose my mind over all the stress and heartbreak I've endured.
Wow. Well, we're glad that you are back, and you're back. You're a strong voice against domestic violence. You know, you have a powerful story, and we're really glad that we can help you share your message and help other women.
Thank you, Lucinda.
Yeah, we appreciate that once again, Ms. Brother Foucault on the line. And we definitely thank you for all you do and giving back with the domestic violence and just our community, period.
And thank you guys. You do a great job, too. And happy anniversary. And I'm sure you'll be on the air next year and the year after. And I wish you all the best.
We hope so, you know what I mean? If it's God's willing, you know. The show Keep It Real show, looked up, it's been 14 years now, and it's like, wow, where do all the time go? You know, just started it in the community in 1998, and wow, I didn't even dream of it going these many years.
Right. Well, you keep it up. You're doing good. You wrote books, you know. I'd like to write a book myself, but maybe one of these days. I say it, but I don't do it, but I will eventually.
Right. You will when the time's right. It's very powerful. I want you to, you know, continue staying with us, Mary. We have another guest coming on the show.
Okay.
This is Lori, and we're going to bring Lori on the show. Lori, are you there?
I am. Hello, Lucinda.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Lori's been a guest on our show, and just a little background on Lori. She was sexually abused, raped, and went through a lot of domestic violence as well, but a lot of abuse in her life. And welcome to the show, Lori. We'll let you go ahead and recap a little bit and let us know, let the audience know a little bit what you've come through.
Yeah, well, that's great. Thanks a lot, Lucinda. Yeah, this is, and I know Mary. Mary's my friend, too. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hey, Laura.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Your story is very powerful, and I'm so glad that you're sharing it and, you know, helping so many people with it, really. I mean,
you too, Lori.
And you know, Boyd and Lucinda, I mean, you guys, congratulations on your third-year anniversary. Like, that's awesome. You guys are doing some great work.
Thanks.
And I think it's you know, every time I kind of cruise by the website and check out your website and see what's happening, there's always something going on. It's awesome to see. You know, it's motivating, right? You know, it lets the rest of us know that, hey, you know, we can do something too. You know, we can try to help out or you know, get involved in some way, right? That's what
mm-hmm.
we're talking.
Right.
No, my story, you know, it's just like so many other people out there growing up abused and in a dysfunctional home, a lot of violence and a lot of domestic violence between my parents. And sexually abused as a child and abused physically and psychologically and stuff. And it was a hard road. You know, I turned to drugs and felt a lot safer on the streets with my friends and stuff, which I knew
mm-hmm.
I wasn't safe out there either, right? But
mm-hmm.
my brothers were involved with a lot of drug use as well, and two of my brothers ended up killing themselves, committed suicide, and they were both really heavy-duty drug users, and they were in prison doing different kinds of prison sentences for different things off and on, and just a horrible existence, you know, horrible existence for them. They weren't necessarily involved in gang activity or anything like that. Growing up, some of my friends were involved in that type of stuff. Like my friends one of my friends was gunned down in his driveway in probably a drug deal gone bad or something. And just things like that, just getting involved with that type of thing. And you know, there's just like the show says, you know, the streets don't love you back. I mean,
that's right.
So true, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
for these young people out here today, you know, you see you know, the violence and the stuff going on with the youth, and it just breaks your heart because you're just like, you know, where's the hope? You know, where's their hope? Because I know I've been there. You know, not necessarily in everybody's. You know, our stories are not exactly the same, but it's just like you get to the point where, like you, Mary, you know, here you are stranded in near San Diego, there, out in the middle of, with no money, no nothing. Like, where's, you know, I mean, you have faith, and maybe if you're a believer in God, I mean, that's wonderful. But you're still sitting there thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like, you've got nobody to turn to, and a lot of these kids out here. You know, they're out here on the streets and stuff. Who do they turn to? You know, where do
exactly.
They... And so they turn to, you know, to the people that are going to back them up and support them. And that's
right.
Who they think is going to support
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Gangs. And it's a sad place for those young people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I you see it and you're just like, oh, man, you know, don't go that way. Because it's a dead-end road.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dead-end road, you know. So, I mean, I have to just commend Boyd for, you know, doing what he's doing, what you're doing, Boyd, and Lucinda. Like, I think it's just amazing and awesome, the different types of programs and different things you guys are doing. It's great to see because it's so needed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, we just keep spreading the word and sharing the links and, you know, reach as many people as you can. And you just hope that somebody, you know, that it helps, you know, it's helping somebody, but you just hope you just reach more and more people, you know. Because it's tough out there for these young people and for adults too. You know, they're sitting there, they're on the street. Who are they going to turn to? Maybe that, you know, they may not have any family that, or even if they do, their family may not be interested in helping them, you know, at all. Maybe they've just burned all their bridges, you know. That's a possibility, too. My brothers were often on the streets. Nobody would help them because they just kept burning their bridges everywhere they went, you know, screwing up, and then nobody would help them. You know, they were just like, look, you know, you're just going to end up back on the street. We can help you and, you know, get back on your feet for 2 weeks until you go and screw it up again. So they kind of, you know, sort of... set the stage for their lives, you know, and they just couldn't pull themselves out of it, so they ended up killing themselves. One of my brothers killed himself. The other one
had a
drug overdose. But, yeah, just horrible stuff. And they were in their 30s, you know, in separate years, like not together, but they were both in their 30s when they did that, and, you know, you just think how low and how far down do you have to be? I mean, I was suicidal, but not necessarily attempting it, but just thinking about it, just getting so down and so low, you know, to the point where you think, you know, this struggle is too painful. It's too much, you know.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Do anybody have a computer on at their house?
I can check real quick. I'll just take a quick look.
We're hearing an echo, and I just want to make sure that
okay.
If you're sitting at your computer and you have it on the show, it's probably just reflecting. So maybe turn the volume down on your computer.
Still on? Mine's off. So.
Okay.
Is the echo gone?
No, I can still hear it.
Oh, okay, I can still hear it. Yeah. But
I don't hear
it
on my end.
You don't hear an echo?
No.
You don't hear
Oh, now I do, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I don't have anybody else on the line right now, so I was just wanting to make sure we could hear everybody real clear. And
right.
It might just be a blog talk or something right now. Hopefully it'll go away. Lloyd, how did you tell the audience how you were able to get away from the abusive situations that you were in?
Well, you know, my parental abuse, you know, just being abused at home and stuff. I mean, I eventually got older and you know, got my parents got older and the physical violence stopped, but the psychological stuff was always there. But I was doing what I did. I started using drugs when I was 12. And, you know, angel dust and really heavy-duty drugs at, like, the age of 12. And I kept on going all the way through until I was about 21. And I got off the drugs. I did it myself. And I realized I was going to die. I was like, I'm just going to die. I'll just end up in the gutter, just dead somewhere, you know, like drug overdose or just, you know, not taking care of myself. And so I just thought, you know, I really don't want to go that way. My brother had just killed himself like the year before. And so at the age of 21, I said, that's it. I really want a different life. You know, something inside of me was just saying, I don't want this. You know, I just want to live like a normal life. I had really never experienced any kind of normal situations. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I left an abusive home and then and then was running with a crowd that was doing drugs and just partying all the time. And so I really wasn't taking care of myself. And I realized that was, I wanted to try to just live a decent life for once, you know. And I just wanted to be like this normal person, just doing normal things. And so at the age of 21, I said, that's it. I have to stop or I'll just be where I know I'll end up, which is just in the gutter, just dead somewhere. So it took me a while to do it, to get off the drugs, but it was something that I really wanted to do. And I just persevered, you know, and I actually had to stop hanging around with the people that I was hanging around with, which was a real, you know, it was hard because these were my friends who, just like so many people, you know, you get involved, like, you know, gangs and whatnot, you get involved with people, these become your family, you know, and you know, in order for me to stay alive, I actually had to separate myself from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that. Like, I talked to them and I said, look, I can't hang around with you guys because I, you know, everybody, we're just going to continue on. I want to stop doing drugs. I want to stop partying. And I want to get myself straightened up. And I can't do it hanging around you guys, you know. Like, I can't party with you anymore. I love you all. They were, you know, they were my family. But I knew I had to do. They understood. They were like, well, you know, we totally get it. You're trying to save your life. And we know, you know, like. So, you know, a few of those people that I was hanging around with around, you know, 20, 21, 22 years older, are dead now, you know, drug overdose and drug use and stuff.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So it takes its toll, you know.
It does.
You see enough of it, and, you know, it's unfortunate. It's just, seeing it just ruin so many people's lives, and just, you know, violence and domestic violence between some of my friends that, you know, that were couples that were together that were fighting a lot and just growing up in that mess, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
It is, because it repeats, the behavior repeats, and unfortunately, as much as you hated that behavior growing up as a child, you don't realize it, and you marry someone that was like that person that was beating you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you run from your house right into the arms of another abuser, because
that's
all you knew.
That's right. Well, that's what happened to my mom. My mom was exactly. My mom was a victim. She grew up abused as a child and then married a man who was abusive, my dad. So she went from one abusive situation to another. And I swore up and down I was not going to do that. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. You know, like any relationship I get into, I mean, it's going to have to be a decent one. You know, so that I've been very blessed. You know, that I have myself. Not been in that situation, you know, picking, you know, like, I mean, I just guess I'm just blessed, you know, because my husband, you know, we've been together about 20 years almost, and he's a good man. You know, he knows where it came from, and he knows what buttons not to push.
Exactly.
And he's just a good man. But this is the thing, it's real hard because I think it's easy for people to become re-victimized. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, you see it over and over and over again. A lot of my friends did that. Some of my friends were, you know, we were all hanging together. A lot of us came from abusive homes. And they ended up in relationships with, you know, like common law and you know, whatnot, husbands and stuff, where they left one abusive situation, ended up, you know, in domestic violence situations with their partners. And, you know, it takes its toll. And it takes
definitely.
Its toll on kids, too. You know, like
definitely.
You were saying, Mary, I mean, turning kids against you and just, you know, it wrecks lives. You know?
Oh, sure does. And then you're not only that, but it wrecks generation after generation if it's not stopped.
Right.
That's why it's so important, like what we're all trying to do, trying to not to wreak havoc with the next generation, trying to help them turn around, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
To you know, break.
Because we didn't have a guidance. None of us did. Even Rob had a lousy childhood. I read his book, and, you know, I applaud you, Rob. But, you know, you just don't know any better because that's what you lived, you know. You really don't.
I think a lot.
And you know what?
I
don't understand. Well, maybe nowadays they're more aware. But when I was younger, the school never got involved in stuff like that. And they and people would have saw me how skinny I was.
Mm-hmm.
Don't the neighbors like say, boy, this poor girl, she's so skinny. It used to be where they would the rest of the family would eat, and they'd say, oh, well, you don't need it anyway. You don't need the rest of the food. We were poor, the rest of the food, because you're skinny as it is. You don't need it. And, like, I was getting – I saw a picture about maybe 6 months ago of me when I was little, and I go, and people didn't know that this kid was starving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I looked at it and that it wasn't me, though, you know,
because
I don't want to look at it like that.
Right.
So when I looked at it and I looked at how skinny I was, and I was maybe 8 years old, and I was thinking, wow, and you went to school like that, and people didn't say, why is this child so skinny? Why is she like this? You know,
mm-hmm.
What's up with that? But today they're more in tune to that abuse or neglect, or the kids that aren't eating. The schools do things for the kids, like they make them breakfast and stuff like that. But but still, no matter how much you do, somebody gets caught in the cracks. You know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's why we see these headlines out here. You know, and yeah, it's a sad situation, and for so many kids and so many youth. You know. Out there, you know, these little kids that are growing up like this end up on, you know, older kids and then end up older youth on the streets, and, you know, where, how are you going to reach them, you know, before they decide that the only way they can live is violence, the only way they can live is drugs, the only way they can live is that kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
And it's hard. It's you just wish that, you know, we could catch them in time before that happens, you know.
Exactly.
I think that's really important.
And not only that, it sets you up for failure in life. It sets you up for, because you don't feel like, you know, you feel like you're a failure. You don't care about school. You don't care about, you know, pursuing a special career. Graduating wasn't a thrill.
Mm-hmm.
Until you realize that it's a sense of accomplishment, you know.
Yeah,
it's like you're gloomed from the beginning.
Oh, totally. Well, it's just like kids. You know, I was thinking about that because I, you know, it's like kids. You know, if they know that they're not worth it to anybody, and that the parents, you know, whoever the parents are, the caregivers don't care about them, and they don't mean anything. Well, then they don't mean anything to themselves.
Exactly.
Because that's what happened to me. You know, I just thought,
too.
You know what? I mean. So I'm worthless. Okay, I'm you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my own, you know, self-esteem was pretty low, you know. And I didn't care if I lived or died. I was like, I don't care. Just kill me now, you know. Whatever. I mean, it didn't matter to me. And then, you know, later on when I got older, I realized, no, I do want to do this, but how?
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then it's trying to gain those skills, and you're almost behind the eight ball all the time.
Oh, you are.
I got to gain the skills that most people would, well, a lot of people
had
would
to
already
begin
have.
With,
that's
yeah.
right. And so
ours were destroyed.
Yeah, it's a hard road to come from, and that's why, you know, it's a real sad thing, you know what I mean, to you know, well, to reach the ones that you can before it's too late. And that's why I think it's very important, like what, you know, Boyd and Lucinda are doing, because, you know, to reach out for these people, because there's all these adults out here, you know, who are in the prison system, who are, you know, doing time for violent crimes or even just, you know, drug running or whatever they were doing. And those were little kids at one point who probably lost hope and or never had it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And never saw another way.
Exactly.
That's got to stop. You know, like that is absolutely ridiculous that a child, that a person should be put in that position, you know, to set somebody on a life like that. You know?
Isn't that something?
It is. It's horrible. And I think... You know, I think it can change. We can all do something, you know, in our own capacity, in whatever field that we feel, you know, pulled to help and get involved and do something, you know, because there's a need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a need, all right. So that's kind of right.
We definitely, you know, thank both of y'all for sharing your story and sharing your message as well, and we're definitely hoping that both messages touch somebody's life and mind, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, and I just, you know, you just see so much struggle and so much you know, hardship and so much, so many problems going on, and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, I mean, you know, for a lot of us, we've been there, you know, and so, and maybe, and got ourselves out of it, you know, and so it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people may not realize how hard it is to be on that other side and to try to pull yourself around to the other side, you know,
right,
to change your life, to make it better, you know, to, you know, to make something out of it, and it's not easy, and you have to work at it, and it's, it doesn't come easy, that's for sure.
No, it doesn't.
It's a steady struggle, you know. But it's worth it. It's so worth it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I've been straight for a long time. So.
Yes, right.
And, you know, got myself pretty straightened out.
Lori, let me ask you one thing. If you could tell the young women, young girls, one thing to maybe help them be able to get out of a situation of abuse, what would you tell them?
Well, I think for me, like, I know what I didn't reach out and get help when I should have. I had the opportunity a few times, you know, that I could have changed the situation, because, you know, a lot of times for some people, they feel like that's their life. Like, for me, that's how I felt when I was growing up. It was just my life, and I didn't necessarily want to be removed from the home, and I didn't want to be removed from my, away from my family, and you know, this kind of thing. And I could have been removed, and I think about that sometimes, and I think, you know, my life would have probably been a lot different had I got help at that time. You know, in my, like, real early teens, you know, I think that my life could have been a whole lot different, because, you know, there was a couple of opportunities where I could have actually had the social workers involved in and gotten some help. And I didn't do it, and it was mainly because I just felt like that was my life, and it could be worse somewhere else, sort of thing. But I now see, like, I really needed love. I really needed somebody to love me. I needed somebody to take care of me and care about me and treat me right, you know. And so for these young people out here, these young girls and young boys out here, you know, if you're in a situation where you're being abused, and whether it's at home or by somebody else, you know, if you make sure that you look for those opportunities to get some help. I mean, you know, make a phone call, talk to somebody, find out what you can do. You know, don't allow yourself to continue to be abused, because it's, you know, I used to be really offended, like, with people, because I wasn't used to being loved. I wasn't used to having people tell me anything nice or anything good. And so when people would say, well, you know, we'll be praying for you, you know, I'd be so offended. I'd just be like, oh, don't pray for me, because I'm already gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I really felt like I was in hell, you know, and it didn't really matter to me. And, you know, don't let yourself get to that point. You do matter. You do count. You know, if you're listening and you're being abused and you're just not sure where to turn, get some help, because you do matter. You as a person have the right to an abuse-free life. You know, you have the right to be treated properly, to be treated with care, respect, and dignity. And it's really going to come down to you to make that choice to get some help, because a lot of times people won't see it, or they'll turn a blind eye. They won't do anything. So I would say to reach out and get some help from somebody, you know.
Right. And if one person can't help, go to a second person.
Right.
Keep going until you get help.
That's right. Because what the one person you talk to may, for whatever reason, not make the right choice to get you some help. And then you think, oh, well, why bother, right? Just keep on going. Keep on talking. Keep on getting some help. Because eventually you're going to run into the right person who's going to know how to handle it and how to get you that help, you know?
Right. Lori, we're going to keep you on here with us, and Mary, we're going to keep you on with us, but we do want to take another call here.
Awesome.
Okay,
and,
thanks.
It's an unknown caller. I know the caller just joined us a few minutes ago. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lucinda. This is Monica Day. How you doing?
Hi, Monica. Great. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for calling in.
Absolutely, and happy anniversary.
Thank you so much. And Miss Monica was a guest on our show a few months ago, and Monica also has a very powerful story of abuse and overcoming abuse. And Monica, I don't know if you've been listening, we have Miss Mary Betasuko on the line and Miss Lori Ann Smith, and they're both abuse and domestic violence survivors. So we have them on the line as well. But we're going to give you a few minutes here to share a little bit of your past and a little bit of your story with us. And then if anybody has any questions, we'll let them out.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I have been listening to the show, and, I mean, we're pretty much sharing very similar stories. I experienced my share of abuse when I was an adolescent and a teen. I attended a church convention big church convention in downtown Durham, North Carolina, and I was raped by a vendor who was there selling products. Prior to this situation, I grew up pretty much in a stable home, two-parent home, Christian environment. And after that, you know, my life just kind of took a complete turn. And I went from being a really good student in school and, you know, on the right track to just pretty much going down the wrong path. The guy was never captured. The reports were put out. The guy was never captured. And so his life went on, and my life pretty much went downhill. Mm-hmm. And what seemed to probably only last maybe, you know, a few minutes, it changed my entire life. I went to counseling, but counseling wasn't helping because if you don't want to talk about it, it's not going to help. And as a child, I was dealing with a lot of confusion, you know, feeling worthless, feeling neglected, feeling violated and disgusted, and all those different emotions that you deal with. And I just shut down, and I suppressed it and wanted it to go away. And that particular incident just kind of trickled into a pretty much my entire teen life dealing with different issues of abuse. I wanted to suppress it, and, you know, eventually that became a ball of anger, and I found myself running away from home, getting in trouble in school, getting suspended, cursing teachers out, being a, you know, juvenile delinquent, and getting into a lot of different trouble. And within my first abusive relationship, when I was about 14 years old, I had to run away from home with an older guy. And, you know, I was sexually abused in that relationship, and physically abused, emotionally abused, verbally abused, and too afraid to go home to tell anybody. And so I just went through that for a few years, ran away with him, continued to get in trouble. And when he was arrested for other charges and went away to prison, that was my freedom back home. Well, when I went back home, I'm still a child who has dealt with sexual abuse several times now and physical abuse, and I don't know how to deal with that, you know. So I'm still getting in trouble in school, and I'm still angry, and I'm still just on the wrong track. And I went from being the victim of abuse to being an abuser. Found myself in a fight when I was about 14, 15 years old. Young girl that I went to high school with, she kind of, you know, betrayed me, and I set up this fight and found myself, you know, myself and three or four other young girls were out in the woods jumping on this girl, and a lot of the threats and things that was said to me from this guy that I was dating earlier, I was saying to her, you know, I'll kill you, calling her out of her name, degrading her and torturing her and making her feel less than human. And so because of I didn't get the treatment that I needed and the counseling that I needed, that just became a cycle of abuse. And that's what I see even today, that there's a thin line between the victim and an abuser, especially if you do not get help. And so, of course, you know, this fight happened. This lady was left out there. This young girl was left out there. And I found myself pretty much, you know, incarcerated as a young kid. And that's where my, I guess, the change kind of happened. You know, I started writing poetry and, you know, creating and kind of using all that stuff that I had experienced and putting into, I guess, poetry, which was beginning to help me. And that's where the counseling and the therapy happened, was while I was there incarcerated, and the remorse for the victim and just all the things that I went through. But when I got out of that place, I still was dealing with abuse. You know, I had gotten the counseling and all that, but when all you've ever known is abuse, and I think, you know, someone touched on that earlier, you find yourself right back into that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out, you know, at about 16, 17 years old, I think I was like 17, mm-hmm. and, you know, thinking that I, you know, I've been incarcerated, you know, I've learned, I've gone through this counseling and therapy, and now I'm ready to, you know, finish high school and get my life going, and I'm back into another abusive relationship within mm-hmm. months of being free.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, it was all that I knew. My mindset at 17 years old was, if he didn't hit me, he didn't love me, because that's
exactly.
the only thing I'd ever seen, you know.
Exactly.
And so I was back into another abusive relationship, and when I look back over it, I was with this guy for about 7 years. I have a daughter from that particular relationship, and I fought to kind of keep this whole family thing together, because
mm-hmm.
I grew up in a two-parent home,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I wanted. But I realized
exactly.
over time, you know, my daughter was becoming a victim of abuse,
exactly.
and she was seeing that.
Exactly.
So it just becomes, you know, a big cycle,
a
but
cycle, yeah.
it's a cycle that, you know,
mm-hmm.
definitely has to, we have to figure out how to talk to people and how to get the message out there and how to,
mm-hmm.
you know, make it, you know, bring it to an end and decrease it. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I got out of, you know, that relationship because I did believe that if I didn't owe it to myself, I owed it to my daughter.
Exactly.
And so I did have the, you know, support from family
mm-hmm.
and friends and stuff, and was able to get out and started, you know, sharing my poetry, which became healing, started speaking publicly, which became healing for me, and started this organization, Stand Up Speak Out, that now works with teens and children who have witnessed domestic violence and abuse. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at now, just trying to get the message out and help other people so that, you know, in hopes that we can somewhat decrease domestic violence and kind of stop this cycle between
exactly.
the victim and abuser.
Very good. Mm-hmm. That's very nice.
Monica, could you just give them your website for Stand Up Speak Out?
Absolutely. The website for Stand Up Speak Out is www.standupspeakout-nc.org. You can also visit me online on my personal site, which is monicaday.com. That's daye.com.
And Monica, I don't know if you have this close by or not, but you did read one of your poetry messages that you wrote when you were on our show last time. Do you have that available?
I don't remember what I did, but I definitely can share a poem with you.
All right, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I really like what you shared with us about on your show, but anyone would be great.
Okay. I don't. Do you remember the one I shared?
I remember a little bit about it. I don't remember what it was called. I mean, it was about domestic violence and being
okay.
being late.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's see. I don't remember which one that is, but I'll do this one that's called Dispatch 911. I want to say this might have been the one that I did, but I'm not for certain.
You know, it might have been. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, so pretty much just to kind of introduce, I guess, this particular piece, it's called Dispatch 911. One thing that I find is that when I go out and do these workshops, young girls come up to me, children come up, and they say, hey, I tried to tell someone, and I think you guys were just talking about this, you know, if a person comes and is trying to tell, you know, a parent or tell somebody that, you know, they've been abused or they're in this situation, please listen to them, because I find that a lot of people, you know, a lot of young girls tell me, you know, I told my mom, but she didn't believe me, you know, and so this piece kind of, you know, relates to that, and along with my own personal story. So here it goes. Too distant to be mentioned. Ripped into pieces of family secrets never to be broken. Hoping no after effects will affect her senses, but it did. After 26 years, hidden tears find their way through the surface. See, she had lost her courage because someone hurt her. Lapse of memory had her taking risk. Lapse of memory had her mind playing tricks, but no, she was starting to remember.
the hit, the first time his penis touched the rim of her lips and he told her the kiss that she clenched, at the taste of leftover urine that made her feel like she would vomit, droplets of premature ejaculation made her hate him. Conversations between God and the devil made her lose her salvation. Devastated that someone who claimed to love her would make her a victim. Close in, more like cousins. Sneaked in while family members sat at the dinner tables, reminiscing on the good old days. While children played in back rooms, they say the little ones are so innocent, so they dropped their overprotectedness. Had older siblings and cousins watch over them while they pretended to be grown up, but someone was too grown up in the game of house. Don't be too loud. Don't ever let this secret come out, and it didn't. Held it in, never to bring it up again. Buried it and swept it in the crease of an abandoned room, never to be resumed. But soon visions would show vivid pictures of little children who would never fully bloom. Confused because their souls had been devoured, and now another innocent child's soul has been devoured, and mama's not paying attention. Too busy listening to the latest gossip coming from the church pulpit that she missed her daughter's cry for her attention. She didn't even know her child's soul was missing, wishing mama would come to her rescue. But that child's 911 phone calls never got through. Lines disconnected. We're sorry. The number you called cannot be completed this time. Please check the number and dial. Call again. And again. And again and again she calls, but no one seems to recall the thousands of calls for help, the rebellious behavior, the suicide attempts, the running away from home, the skipping school, the unable to pay attention in school, the multiple sex partners. Did anyone bother to take the time to calculate the signs? No. They just brushed it off, said this was just a phase that would soon fade away, so they took olive cooking oil and anointed her head and prayed. But soon after that, they lost their faith, took her to unfamiliar counselors who thought they could make her break the silence. But she was too far gone now. She was violent, juvenile delinquent, all because her guardian angel, a.k.a. her mother, didn't pay attention. She just didn't believe that someone snatched her precious seed, took her on the fourth floor of the elevator, and robbed her of her virginity while she was in the same vicinity speaking in tongues, giving God the glory. But no one wants me to remember this story, and no one really wants me to tell this testimony, but I have to, because as you sit and listen to this poem, every second that goes by, a child is being abused, a son is left confused, a daughter is left internally bruised, and a mother is refusing the truth. This could be you. Your child might be screaming right now for you to come to her rescue. Don't disregard it. Don't disconnect it. Don't press ignore on your cell phone, because your child might be screaming for your help because she's afraid and alone. So answer that 911 phone call and dispatch yourself to your son's or daughter's location, because your voice and your presence might just be their savior. Thank you.
That's
wonderful.
Fantastic.
That was one, and it's just as powerful as the first time I heard it, you know.
Thank you.
So powerful. I love it, you know, and it's so honest, and people need to wake up out here, and we need to pay attention to our children and other children. I mean, we need to look for the signs and symptoms of abuse and low self-esteem and all the things that we need to help change out here.
Right. Another thing, too, is that, I mean, you know, if we got any teachers or educators listening on the line, you know, also paying attention to the kids that are in school. Sometimes they're acting out. Their behaviors are, you know, they're acting out. They're not being able to pay attention and things like that. And a lot of times I find when I have been in the school system, they will, you know, brush it off. Oh, this child can't function. Oh, she has ADHD or he has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're so quick to put that label on kids when sometimes we really need to just kind of evaluate and investigate what's going on, because it may be some form of abuse that's going on in the home that's causing them not to be able to focus.
Exactly. Well, I remember when I was in, I was 14, and I had told the school, well, I grew up in a violent area anyway, so I was already like that, because that's all I knew. But this particular incident happened to me, and that was horrible to me too. And the school brought me to the psychologist, the school's guy psychologist, and I told her the story, and they didn't do anything. Imagine. But you know, that was years ago. Today they're a little bit more, but still. And I had told my mother the story too, and At first she wasn't believing it, but then I told her what color underwear he had on. He couldn't deny that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then she knew. This happened to be some man that she was seeing.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't get to that because I was a tough girl.
Mm-hmm.
I winded up punching him and punching him and punching him. I was able to get free myself. So,
that's good. Yeah, I mean, you had to keep it all the way in.
I had practice for many years. I mean, I had a lot of practice.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
The fact that, I was 14, I was like probably the most like 80 pounds, but I still fought, honey. And I kept punching him and punching. I got away. But, I was lucky, because some people don't get away, But I was used to violence and had a fight. I knew how to, fight. So it was like, come on, that kind of thing. But it was a shock, And I had another incident where a guy tried to attack me. We had pulled over on the road, and he came at it. It was in California. And he came over. I didn't realize it was dark. And he came out of the, the shoulder of the road, when you pull over on the freeway. And he came out, and I'm fixing a coffee cup, and I'm making it where I could sip the coffee cup, because back then they didn't have those kind of coffee cups that you press and you can drink them with the lid on. So you have to kind of bite it to make it, So I was doing that, and all of a sudden I took a look. You feel like somebody's looking at you? And I used to smoke then, so I had the window cracked open a little bit for the cigarettes, the smoke to go out. And I had a feeling while I was doing this that somebody's at the window, and I look, and oh, my God, this guy actually had his hands on the window. Those days they rolled them up, you had to roll them up. You don't press the button. He had his hands, his hands on top of the window like he was looking in like he wanted to do something. So I quickly used my coffee cup with the hot coffee, and I rolled it down real quick, and I threw it at him, and then I rolled it up, and I took off.
Right.
But,
I
have that instinct.
You was a little feisty little lady then.
Yes, I was.
Exactly. Sounds like a winner. Hey, if it takes that to keep the hanks off you, why not?
Yeah, no, exactly. Because I had such fear, and some people fear freeze it, you stay freeze, and I'm sympathetic to that, but my fear puts me in, because of my street days, you know how it is.
Yeah.
You don't have fear anymore.
Right, without
a
doubt.
Beyond that fear, you see it, you see the shock, you get fear first, and then it's either fight or flight. Mine always turned into fight. But,
without a doubt.
You know what I mean? You know how it is, you got to survive. Because it's funny because I didn't like myself at all because of what I went through and the way my self-esteem was. But yet I had a strength that I didn't want somebody to take me down either. You know what I mean? It didn't make sense.
And you stuck
on one
in
hand.
There.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I just want to give a big shout-out to my wife for being such a hard-working lady and what all we do and all her work and hard message that she puts out there as well, and for starting the show with me 3 years ago. And we just blessed
you guys
to keep things moving. And today we finally got confirmation that all my music has been formally released on iTunes and U.S.
Congratulations.
Japan.
That's
great. So, we got the music popping now everywhere. So that was a blessing to get that confirmation today. So,
that's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So 3 years today, and this, today is the day the music got launched and delivered. So that's a good day. Good day is the day.
Yeah, that's success, see?
Anniversary music delivered. So that's
there
a beautiful combination. Yes, indeed. So, ladies, I'm going to pass it over to the missus for a minute. And once again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in on the chat room and coming on the line. And we're just going to continue doing what we do with the help of our fans and the help of our supporters.
Got it. That was some poem. I mean, I could feel that. You know, that was great what you did.
Thank you. Thank
that
you.
That is really good.
I definitely appreciate it.
I know.
Monica, do you have any shout-outs or any questions or any more comments you'd like to share while you're on tonight?
I just want to, like I said, and with everything that I do related to art and poetry and things like that, I definitely encourage people, like some people I know may not be into writing, but one thing is for sure, whether you write poetry or you journal or whatever, I know there is a power in creativity and art therapy. And with Stand Up Speak Out, that's one thing that we're trying to show, especially with working with young teens and children who don't necessarily know how to channel the behaviors. I mean, I think about when I was a kid and just after being raped, I didn't know, you know, I had all these different feelings and emotions and just not really sure who I was and why does it happen, and it's just all balled up in one. And of course, when you're a child, you know, you got all these different emotions going on, you don't necessarily know how to articulate that, so it comes out as anger. And so with Stand Up Speak Out, we're trying to help young people learn how to express themselves through creativity. And it's not just writing poetry. We use journaling, we use dance, we use art and different things like that to help them to kind of make sense of what has happened, and also to teach them that it's not their fault. What we're trying to do ultimately is to break that cycle so that they don't become abusers themselves. And so we know through studies and statistics and research that there is about a 45% chance for people who have been in homes where there is violence that the child may possibly become violent themselves. So sometimes we see it, and, you know, a child may grow up in a home where there is verbal abuse, you know, and it's just constant verbal abuse or emotional abuse, and they may not grow up to be, you know, just verbally or emotionally abusive. They may grow up to be, you know, an aggressor, sexually aggressive, aggressor, or, you know, physically abusive. So we know that there's a cycle there, and so what we're trying to do is really get with the kids, teach the kids, and show them another method, you know, so that we don't continue that whole cycle. And so I encourage people, you know, that are listening, check out the website, you know, if you are interested. And, you know, we always like people to submit stuff to us, and it gets posted on our website. You know, reach out to me if you want to be involved in some things that we're doing. We are based in North Carolina. However, we do travel, so that's one good thing. Our community outreach travels to different colleges and universities and churches and help to show demonstrations and things like that to other places so that they can also use this art therapy method as well.
Right. You know, I have a question for you, Monica. You mentioned that after your rape, you became very angry, and you became a bully for another person.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience, and can you just talk about that a little bit, do you think that most bullies nowadays have gone through some event like that in their lives to make them so angry or not?
I think it's definitely a strong possibility. We deal with a lot of the cyberbullying and things like that. I mean, not every person might not have experienced some form of, you know, abuse, but maybe, you know, how they feel about themselves. But I do think if we sat down and we kind of investigated the bullying and the people that are bullying, we probably would find some form of, you know, abuse, whether it's in the home or, you know, something that they have witnessed, whether it's directly or indirectly. And that's one thing that, you know, we have to realize is that when there is abuse in the home, whether it's between two, you know, partners, two parents or whatever, the child may not be involved. But if the child is in that home, they are involved. You know, they are becoming subject to that abuse, even if they just hear it and it's just yelling back and forth and the child is in the other room. That fear
is built in that child, and that child, you know, gets confused as far as, you know, how do they communicate? Because we're our children's example. So if we are not teaching them how to communicate, well, when they become adults, what do you think they're going to do? If mama and daddy was yelling all the time and fussing back and forth and that's how they communicated, then how do you think those children are going to communicate? Probably in the same manner. So, you know, I can't say that every bully has witnessed rape, sexual abuse, molestation, things like that. But I do know that if you act out in this particular way, whether it's bullying or whatever, there's a reason why you are acting out or lashing out in this manner.
Right. There's a problem. And that's where teachers need to pay attention to the kids in school that are being a bully. They need to find out, I guess, where the what the problem is that's making them be so aggressive towards other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also pick on the people who have low self-esteem and who they know that they can get over on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or who they think they can.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
I want
ladies to kick me out all the time.
Are you
able to stay on
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you able to stay on for a few more minutes?
Yeah, I can stay on for a few more minutes. I don't know if you knew this, Lucinda, but I had a baby about 4 months ago.
And congratulations.
Thank
I wasn't
you.
Sure I that
So right now the baby is sleeping, so we have a little time.
Okay, we have another caller, and I just wanted you guys to hang on so you could maybe ask questions or something. But we're going to go ahead and take this next call, and the last three digits are 902. Hello,
you're on the air. Yes, I am.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yes, I was just calling in. I don't know if I missed the show I was looking for or not, but I was definitely interested in what you guys were talking about. I myself suffered from low self-esteem when I was younger, and I didn't realize it until I was older. And I couldn't love anyone else because I didn't love myself.
Mm-hmm.
But as a child growing up, I wasn't able to address it. I wasn't able to cry out for help and say that I needed help, so I had to put on a mask. I had to
mm-hmm.
cover up. And, you know, so what I did is I ended up going to jail, dropping out of school, and going the wrong route. And when I called in, I wasn't expecting you guys to be on the phone, but you just hit it home for me when you guys were talking. So definitely acknowledge what you're talking about. Great show. Keep up the work.
Yeah, we appreciate you calling in, Skip, man, and we appreciate
oh,
all the good work you do.
What's up, man?
Oh, you know we good, man. Me and the missus just glad to communicate with everybody. You know, Big John called in earlier, and, you know, our third-year anniversary on the radio show today is our third year, so we appreciate everybody calling in and speaking on what they do in their organization and making people aware of what's happening, you know? And that's Skip to everybody from L.A., you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. I always support you guys, man. I think what you're doing is global. What we're doing in our communities is good. It's a good thing that we do this in our communities, but I think what you've done, Rob, is you let the world know. Well, we letting the neighborhoods know, you letting the world know that that we do have people that are out there that care about us and thinking about rewriting the wrong that we've been doing, man. So I truly appreciate your efforts and Ms. Lucinda as well. Appreciate the work that you guys do.
Thank you, Skip. If you have a couple of minutes, could you just tell the audience a little bit about your background and your gang affiliation as you grew up and how you were able to change and how you started your organization?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of just did when I was talking about the low self-esteem. I grew up in the West Adams area of Los Angeles for 27 years. I was labeled as a gang member, as a blood gang member. But, you know, I'm Yvonne's son. I just didn't have the right choices. I didn't have the right guidance in my life. Grew up without a father. My father was on the other side of town, and, you know, my mother used him as a punishment. We'd have to go live with him. So I didn't have that male figure in the home every day. So me and my brothers, we made it up as we went along, and we chose the wrong route. You know, now I start an organization, Second Call, myself, Kenny Smith, Big John, Karen, Kelly, Shantez. We come together, and what we're doing in the community is we're giving back. We're helping people find employment. We're doing violence reduction not with the at-risk people, with the proven risk. We're going to the people who we know got the murder convictions that will stab you and rob you and break in your house, whether you're home or not, and we're helping to get them employed, teach them the process. And it's so important that when I first called in, that you guys were talking about the low self-esteem, because as a man, there's no outlet for it. So that's what we provide at Second Call, the outlet to say, hey, look, I'm depressed. Or the outlet to say that, you know what, I don't know how to read, I don't know how to write. And pretty much not to see what they're running to, but can we identify what they're running from and help them where they are? Not just say that everybody should be on one level, you know? So at Second Call, we're doing the grassroots work. We're doing it without funding. I'm also a part of the Southern California Ceasefire Committee, where all the organizations get together and strategize on how to make safe and healthy communities. And it's just a blessing to be able to do this work. After, you know, facing double life in prison and all the different years of going back and forth to jail, suffering from recidivism, it's just a blessing to be able to do this work and pretty much have some sense of atonement for my life. So I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to even talk about it.
Amen.
Well, we appreciate you for sharing your story and your life with us, and we always look forward to working with you and networking with you. It's been a pleasure over the last 3 years, and we just look forward to continuing that relationship.
Oh, no, I look forward to it as well. I can't wait for you guys to come back to L.A.
We'll be there. We'll be there soon, and we'll get together. Mary or Monica, do you have any questions or comments for Skip?
No, I just want to say, tell him that, well, I have a comment. Tell him that you're doing a good job, and good luck to you, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes, and when we get back to L.A. this time, we definitely got to go up to Roscoe's, man. You know, we ain't made it up there yet.
You got to have Roscoe's. And they got a new location out here in Inglewood, too, brother. So we'll definitely
get
one of these tables, man.
Do they still got the one up on Sunset?
Yeah, there's one off of Sunset and Gower. One in Inglewood, Pico, and the one on Main in Manchester. The one on Main in Manchester is truly a blessing to the community because that's high crime rate. That's where most of the murders take place. And they ain't shooting fighting in front of Roscoe. For whatever reason, they know the chicken and waffles in there. So they're going around the corner and scratch and kill each other all day, but not at Roscoe.
Right, man. I mean, when me and my boys started coming out there in the early 80s, man, you know, we used to always go to the one right there on Sunset, you know. And I remember meeting Janet Jackson there, man. That was in 1986, you know.
Oh, man.
I still got pictures, man, when we used to be out there all the time, me and my homeboy Steve and all them, you know.
Yeah, you know, the celebrities go to that one right there in Hollywood. But, you know, when President Obama came to L.A., President Obama came to the Roscoe's on Pico, just made a sudden stop in there and didn't tell anybody, man. And they just shut the street down
Roscoe. My man, you know. But, and the missus want to ask you something right quick, Skip.
All right.
Hey, Skip, can you give a few words to the youth out here that are involved in gangs, and if they wanted to get out of gangs, can you give them some advice on what to do and how to do it, or at least to get away from that situation?
Yeah, I mean, my best advice for getting out of a gang, because some people say, oh, you can never get out, and me personally, I don't ask the youth to get out of the gang. What I ask them to do is not be violent. Let's start with that. Do I have to be violent against other people? And the number one thing that I can do to make myself better, I don't want to be dead or in jail, is I can go to work. I can go to school. I can go back to school. I can go to work. And I'm still affiliated with my area, my neighborhood, my community, but I'm not affiliated with the gang. I'm not affiliated with the negative energy that's being portrayed by the individuals who are still doing the negative action. But do I love my community? Yes. So for all the young kids who are involved in this and think there's no way out, the way out is going back to school. The way out is just not showing up. When people say, why you wasn't there when we went and did this? Oh, man, I was in school. Or why you didn't do it? Because I got a job. And all you have to do is just stay focused on the positive path. There's an old saying that when in Rome, do as the Romans do, not me. When I go to Rome, I want the Romans to do what I'm doing. I'm leading a positive lifestyle, so I'm not going to be that follower. I'm going to be the one to lead. I'm going to be the trendsetter. You know, let them try to do what I'm doing. Let them see the positive light and steal from my community to this day. Still live in the community, but I'm just doing it in a positive way instead of a negative, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And you're making a positive impact, you know, in your neighborhood, and that's what it takes for people not to leave their area because it's so bad, but to stay in their area and become leaders and help change that area and get back to a peaceful society.
Yeah, I agree. So many people get focused on getting out of the gang, but then that means, you know, sometimes it's your little brother or your next-door neighbor. So it's not really so much of a gang. Is it the way of thinking, the mentality that I have to aggress on somebody or hurt somebody simply because of where they live or simply because of their clothing or what they claim? So what I want to do first is stop the violence, because a lot in L.A. is domestic violence. It's not even gang-related. A lot of it is random violence, and in some portions of the city we got racial violence. So how can I deal with my everyday life without being violent? How can I be angry and mad and not want to aggress on somebody? That's the key.
Definitely. You know, and how do we stop the continual negative attitude? I mean, there's so much negativity out here. You know, people try to draw you into it, but you have to be that leader and be the change in your community and be that positive change and that positive mentor. And
yes.
We got a lot of work out here.
Yes, indeed. Hey, listen, when I first called in, I was listening to a lady talk about it. The lady said she has the 4-month-old daughter, and she was hitting it right on the head when she was speaking about the low self-esteem, because it's easy to drag me into something negative if I have low self-esteem and I haven't set a value for myself. Mm-hmm. See, right now I'm too valuable to get caught up in that. I realize my value, not only to myself, but my community and my children. But if you're talking about a child 19, 20 years old who hasn't yet realized his value, it's going to be easy to get him caught up and ready to shoot, fight, kill, or do whatever because he hasn't recognized that value. So we have to help individuals see the value in themselves even when they don't see it.
Exactly. And I just want to kind of, you know, piggyback on that. Is so many people that you see every day, and you look at them and you're like, oh, you know, they feel good about themselves. They have high self-esteem. But that's not always the case, because just because they paint a picture of what they look like on the outside does not mean that's what they really feel on the inside. And we see that through the behaviors that they exhibit, you know, especially with the young people. You know, when you care about yourself and you love yourself, you carry yourself with as a person with dishonest and with good, you know, an integrity about yourself. And so those are the things that we have to learn how to instill into our kids. And, you know, I appreciate you, brother, for, you know, what you're doing in the community, because that's what it takes. It takes all of us. It takes that strong man that's out here doing something and showing these males, and it takes the women, you know, getting out here and showing them as well that you are somebody. And it doesn't matter where you've come from. It doesn't matter what lifestyle you've lived, whether you've been in the gang, whether you've been a murderer, whatever it is, everybody has an opportunity to change and then to also give back. And so I just, you know, just want to big up everybody that, you know, have called in and people that are listening. Like, everybody has a purpose. Whatever you've gone through, whatever you have experienced, it was not by mistake. And so now it's a part of you, and what you have to do now is give back so that we can help this next generation.
Right. I agree with you. I think it's a blessing to be on the radio with you, sister. What is your name?
Monica Day.
Monica Day. It's a pleasure, Monica.
Yes, indeed.
Monica has an organization called Stand Up and Speak Out. And, Monica, do you want to just give that website out one more time? And we
yes.
can also relay that to Skip as well.
Yeah, that website is www.standupspeakout-nc.org. And then my personal website is monicaday.com. And, you know, for those that are just listening, like I said, the organization is very unique. We use art therapy as a method of helping teens and children who've been in homes where there's domestic violence and sexual abuse. And we use those methods. You know, we deal with self-esteem. We deal with confidence. We deal with rebuilding the person, because if you're in a place where there is abuse and all that, how are you going to feel good about yourself or feel, you know, empowered and things like that? And so we have to just kind of, we work to channel different behaviors that the kids are having. Instead of them lashing out in anger, we want to show them how to learn how to cope with things that they have experienced so that they become better people.
Yes, indeed. I think that's one of the keys, too, that a lot of individuals don't have the coping skills. That's what we lack as well. I don't have the coping skills or the coping mechanism, even in my brain. I don't even, I'm not a psychiatrist, but, you know, for the most part, there wasn't coping mechanism in my brain. So with little things that I just couldn't tolerate, and I didn't know why. But now that I'm older, I see it and I understand it. And if we could somehow implement that in some of the younger people, it would be great.
Exactly. And when you don't know how to cope, what's the first thing that you do?
I revert back to my old ways.
That's right. You lash out, you refer back to your old ways. When I didn't know how to cope, it came out as anger. It came out as fighting. It came out as cursing people out. It came out as getting in trouble. When you learn how to deal with it and you learn how to self-evaluate and say, okay, this is what I feel, you know, this is why I feel it, you know, and finding ways to change that and really, you know, for me, it's about expression. So when I express myself through poetry and my gift, it helps me to heal and deal with some of those things that I might not necessarily knew how to express as a kid to a counselor. But through writing, it has helped me to learn how to express myself and to be open, you know, to being honest with myself through my writing.
That sounds like a winner then, Ms. Day. Ms. Butterfuku, you have any last words you would like to say?
I would just like to say thank you, Rob, for inviting me, and thanks, Monica, and thanks, Lucinda, and congratulations on your 3 years. And I just want to say good night to all.
We would like to say thank you again, Ms. Butterfuku, and you keep up the great work as well. And thank you for all your support.
Oh, you're welcome. Good night.
Right,
good
night,
all. Good night.
All right, Skip, do you have any last words, any shout-outs you would like to give for any events coming up you would like the viewers to know about?
Yeah, you know what? Saturday the 23rd of June, we're going to do a March for Peace in the city of L.A. on Adams, starting at Adams and Hobart. One of my good friends, Rocky Miller, Rollin Rocky Miller, he was one of the founders of Unity One. He was with Bo Taylor when he started, and he also was with us at Second Call. He was murdered July 1st, and his family has started the Rocky Miller Foundation, and we're going to help them with a walk for peace. We're going to support them in a walk for peace, 10 a.m. There's a fire station that's been closed for over 40 years, and we're going to start at that fire station. We're asking the city of L.A. to open the fire station and let us use it for a youth center. So that's coming up. And I also want to leave my website, www.secondcall.org. The number 2ndcall.org, to follow us and see some of the things that we're doing. And remember, the Second Call is not funded. You know, we're all volunteers. We're a group of volunteers who are just looking for atonement, looking to give back to the community. But my last words that I want to say is, once again, I'm honored and privileged to be your guest tonight, one of your guests. And as we change the mindset and the mentality of the young people, I'm so glad that there are others who are changing the perception that society has on our children and young people. And together, with the collaboration, we can change the system that we're putting them in. So I'm truly appreciative of all the collaborators that you have on the phone this evening. So thank you once again for letting me be a part of it.
Yeah, we appreciate you too, Skip, you and your whole crew, Ms. Vicky, and Big Cal, and everybody out there. Big John, that, you know, that's doing a marvelous job out there. And your whole Miss Kim, everybody, you know, we miss your name. The whole squad, you know what I mean, that's on the ceasefire, that's on Second Call, everybody, you know. And we just privileged to meet my man Skip and Miss Vicky and Kim and everybody. And we look forward to continuing our work everywhere. And once again, Skip, keep up the great work you all is doing, and sending love to the family and everybody. And we're going to continue our journey as we see it fit to roll.
All right. Appreciate you guys, and appreciate talking to you too, Monica. So,
yes, indeed.
I'll be looking you up on the website, all right?
Please do. I look forward to talking to you and chatting with you again.
Hey, all right. Thank you. Yes, indeed. So.
Hey, before you go, Skip, I want you to let the viewers know about your TV stream show you be doing. Let the viewers know about that.
I was streaming live. I was streaming live for about 5 or 6 months on Ustream. It was set up by a guy named Felix Washington at 1061 Productions. So you can go on and see some of the stuff I did. I've interviewed Cam. I interviewed Minister Tony Muhammad, Deputy Chief of Police, the Mayor of L.A., a few other people. But I stopped doing it for a minute because I was just running myself raggedy. I was doing something Monday through Sunday. So we're talking about doing the show again. And I'll definitely do it if you guys come out here. If you and Mr. Cinder come out here, you know I'm going to do the show, Mr. Boyd, sir. So if anybody wants to see it, they can go 1061production.com and look up the Second Call Show. There's a number of shows that he was doing streaming live, but mine was the Second Call Show. And it was
my man. And I appreciate you giving that out. And Ms. Monica, once again, we appreciate you coming on the show and everything. And, you know, like we tell everybody, you know, always remember that the streets don't love you back. And whoever has not logged on to the website, please join us at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.name.com. Don't forget about to log on to our store page and order our clothesline. And we have our books out, The Streets Don't Love You Back, Never Hit a Woman, those girls, you know, you name it. We got it there at the store. So if you don't see it, just ask for it. So we appreciate everything once again, and I'll pass the mic to the message.
All right. And thank you, Skip, for calling in and sharing a part of your life with us once again.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Have a great night, Skip.
All right. Good night.
Good night. And Monica, do you have any last shout-outs?
Well, I definitely want to say, once again, happy anniversary. You know, it's always a pleasure to connect with you. And I used to do radio years ago, so I know what it's like to keep that show going and keep the listeners intrigued. So 3 years, and I'm just, you know, hoping you guys can keep it moving for another 3 to 10 years. So just want to say congratulations to you. I love what you're doing. And once again, thank you for just being an outlet for people like myself and, you know, people that are entrepreneurs and doing what we do to try to bridge that gap with the community to make a change. So big ups to you guys. And, you know, we'll connect again soon.
That's right.
All right, Ms. Deb.
Thank you so much, Monica, for being part of our life.
All right.
Congratulations on that baby once again. All right, and before we close out tonight, we just want to remind you we have the Junior Golden Gloves here in Arizona June 29th and 30th, and that's at the Victory Outreach in Phoenix. That's on McDowell and 47th Avenue, and that's Friday night and Saturday, June 29th and 30th. And what else do we have, Boyd? We're just excited, you know, that we've done so much in the last 3.5 years since we started the movement. You know, it's just been amazing. We've done one thing after another. We've met, you know, like we say, people from the East Coast to West Coast, you know, South to the North. We've met so many wonderful people, so many people that have gone through so much heartache and so much pain and have overcome and are reaching out to teach the new kids, the new generation, that you don't have to live a life of violence, a life of crime, a life of low self-esteem, a life of hate, that there is love and there is positive influence, there's positive mentors. There's people out here that you can look up to and reach up to for help. You don't have to live, you know, that sad, lonely life. You know, there's people that you can talk to. There's always help. And if the first person you get to can't help you, go to the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth. But there are people out here to help pull you out of those difficult situations and those hard times. There's people out here that do love and do have hope and do have courage and do have strength. And, you know, that's what we're networking, you know, with so many friends to help share that message with the youth of our country, because they are the next leaders of our country. And, you know, we're just trying to change the hate and the trouble to a more positive situation and a positive country. There's so many things that we can change, and so that's our goal. You know, we're here to to help change our country, help change our youth, to educate them, to keep them motivated, and to let them know that there's good things out here that they could be doing. And with that, I'm going to hand the mic back over to Rob. You know, like I said, Rob, you know, it's been a great 3 years, and there's just so much that we've accomplished and so much to look forward to.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank everybody once again who came on. And once again, like I said, thank my wife for being such a, you know, person to stay focused on what the dream is and what it is to just continuously give back to others and just continue seeing progress at what we do to help others. So we just appreciate the gift that we have to do. And when we started the show out, you know, we didn't look forward to, you know, go like it went. We just was, you know, I just happened to get the information from a friend of mine, and next thing you know, I told my wife about it and named the show Boyd and Lucinda and passed the ball to her, and the rest is history. She takes it all the way to another level every time, so the miss is something else. So we just appreciate all of that, you know. And once again, log on to our website, www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com, and like I said, check out our store and check out all the things that's there, and continue, you know, and being involved, basically, you know, and helping others, you know, because at the end of the day, it helps you when you help others. So God bless, stay good, and stay focused.
All right, and with that, we are going to go out with a song tonight by Kendall Day. He's a new artist out of Detroit, Michigan, under the direction of Grand Slam Records. And he has his first single out, so go to his YouTube and his iTunes account, Kendall Day, and look him up. He's an awesome new artist, and we're going to just listen to his song as we go out tonight, and it's called All For You. Once again, thank everybody for listening tonight, those that listened online, those that called in, those that were in the chat room. It was a great show. It's been a great 3 years. We look forward to the next year and beyond, and please join us next Wednesday night where we will discuss cyberbullying, and that'll be an interesting show as well. As we know, with all the new technology out here, you know, people can be pretty mean online and say things that they wouldn't normally say to people in person. So check us out next Wednesday night, topic cyberbullying, and once again, have a great week, and thank everyone for your wonderful, generous support over the last 3 years, and we look forward to many years to come. And once again, all for you. Good night.
Everything is all for you. All for you. All for you. Everything I do when it's all tonight. Everything is all for you. All for you. All for you. Everything I do when it's all tonight. Baby, it's all
everything
for
you. Everything is all for you. Heard from your girl you was hitting the club, so I'ma show some extra love, and I'ma get fresh as fuck for you tonight. And I'ma make sure everything's brand new.
Everything touching my body is
brand new. See the mirror, don't lie. Feeling like that guy tonight, so.
From the ballet, seven spinning bottles of Moscato and rosé. All out, it was okay, okay, okay.
So baby, what you gonna do for me? Cause
everything is all for you. Oh, oh. Everything is all for you.
All for you. All for
you. Everything I do when it's
up
tonight.
Baby, it's all
everything
for you.
Is all for you.
VIP never felt so lovely. Drinks never looked so bubbly. Don't you just love me? From the club to the telly, what's up? Private suite, can't nobody interrupt. Perfect night for the both of us. And this is how we started out.
From LA, seven, six, five, yeah.
I'm loving Loving everything you do for me.
That's why
everything is all for you.
Oh, oh, you.
Oh, for you.
Oh, for you.
Everything
hey.
You do when it comes to me.
Baby, it's all
for you.
Everything is all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Oh, you know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
All for you.
All for you.
Everything I do is all for you. Everything is all for you.
Everything is all for you.